24th. Would you please stand and join us in the pledge and call this meeting to order?
I pledge allegiance to the flag of the United States of America and to the republic for which it stands, one nation, under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all.
We have a brief change in the agenda. Judge Kennedy is in court. She's going to be a few minutes late. So we're going to move on to our resolutions to be adopted. Tim?
Let's start with...
Oh, you can approve the... First, we need a motion to approve the minutes.
So move.
Second.
Commissioner Furman?
Yes.
Mr. Dolivet?
Yes.
Commissioner Dixon?
Yes. We'll move on to resolutions to be adopted. Tim?
Separate resolution to be adopted. First, we have a resolution for the ratification collective bargaining agreement between MRDD and the Professionals Guild of Ohio. And then we have three performance bond cancellations. Why don't we do the three performance bond cancellations in one motion and consider those first?
Move to approve.
Second.
Commissioner Furman?
Yes.
Commissioner Jolivet?
Yes.
Commissioner Dixon abstain. Now we have a resolution to approve the ratification of the collective bargaining agreement between Butler County MRDD and the Professionals Guild of Ohio. Mr. Crane? Or Christina?
Good morning, Commissioners. Tim?
Good morning.
I'm Christina Hurst, Superintendent of the Butler County Board of MRDD, and I want to thank you for giving me and Mr. Crane just a moment to make a couple remarks prior to the action on the MRDD union contract. We'll be glad to answer any questions you may have. Mr. Crane will review some major provisions in the contract, and I want to set the stage for where the Board of MRDD is sitting at this point. And I think that's important because everyone knows the county budget is in serious situation today because of the impact of the current economic crisis. So my first point is this. The Board of MRDD operates with zero county general revenue funds. We operate with levy funds, state funds, and federal funds. If we did operate with county general funds, we would not be here today asking for this contract to be approved. The fact is that the Board of MRDD is in a different place than the county offices. We have been in tumultuous financial times since 2005 because of a series of state funding decreases and Medicaid funding changes. Because we've been experiencing ongoing financial challenges, we have had to make numerous changes in how we do business so that we could continue to serve an increasing number of individuals with less resources. We did this quietly but deliberately. We didn't come back and ask for more tax levy on the ballot. We didn't come and say that we overspent our budget. We struggled to adjust to the revenue decreases so that we could maintain quality services and do the best we could to keep up with the needs of individuals that need support. This year alone, we decreased our planned budget by $3.9 million from last year. Since 2005, we've reduced our staff by 27%. We decreased some of our direct services and learned to encourage and rely on other providers. We adjusted and reduced existing contracts for services. Each year we present to you our budget, we project for you a budget scenario for 10 years out, we do contingency planning, and we spend within our budget. The board has operated on three mills since 1984. Over the last 5 years, the average annual increase to staff salaries has been 2.9% with no annual step increases. We have worked hard to keep our health insurance costs down. Finally, whatever decision you make today, we want you and the public to know that we recognize that we can only provide what the public can bear. And we have been highly aware of the need to be accountable to the public. We operate on defined annual goals and outcome measures. We give wage increases contingent on performance and attendance requirements. Our wages for direct service staff, the group impacted by this union contract, fall below the average when compared to other county boards in the state. We know that the finances will continue to be a challenge. We know that the public, including ourselves, are critical of public entities, especially in times like these. The public expects us to do the job of supporting individuals with developmental disabilities. This includes maintaining a stable direct service staff that is highly trained. Historically, the public has supported us through tax levies. We do not take that for granted. The board and I will continue to be resourceful, vigilant, and do what it takes to gain and keep public trust and support so that we can serve individuals with developmental disabilities in Butler County as we are charged to do. Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you, Christina, and members of the commission. I would like to just talk about the contract a little bit. It follows up on another contract that we negotiated that you approved last November, provided for very modest increases for about a dozen of our teaching staff. This contract is for our support staff, about 80 individuals, and again, it provides for very modest increases in each year of the contract for these individuals, and it is consistent with a budget that you approved for us to negotiate with back in December. There are no other material changes in the contract. I would point out, as I did in my communication with you, that this contract has a very, very unusual feature in it. It's one of the few of the over 300 that I have negotiated that has what's called an automatic freeze provision. In other words, if in the event our funding drops, and our projected revenues are less than our projected expenses for a period of 12 months, as certified by our finance director, then the employer has the ability to pull the plug on any increases, any kind of increase, for a period of 1 year. It's very unusual to have that kind of provision given to you by a union. But that's in this contract because this union trusts these individuals and the MRDD board to be fair with them and to only take that action if it's absolutely necessary. Since we met with you in December, this board's funding has actually improved a bit from the federal side, so we're in pretty good shape, and we bring this to you for approval. One other fact that's important to understand is that this contract does not have traditional steps. An employee will only receive an increase in their base pay over and above the yearly increase if one is given after their third year of employment, and then every 5 years after that. And it comes in the form of a 2.5% increase and a modest longevity payment, if you will, $500, that does not go on the base. This mechanism has about half of the cost of traditional steps. I have to say that of all the employers that I represent and all the agencies that you administer in Butler County, this has to be one of the most well-run that I've seen from the financial and the operational side. As Christina indicated, the superintendent, they didn't wait for anybody to tell them to right-size their staff. They've been making these cuts all along. So what they're asking for today is consistent with those efforts, your directions, and we ask you for your approval. I want to say also, since I have the dais, that as a labor attorney in the public sector, I've had the honor of representing communities throughout southwestern Ohio, city of Dayton, city of Cincinnati, and many in between. And I empathize with you in the situation that you're in. You're not alone. Most communities out there are in very difficult circumstances financially, and we're having to do things contractually that we haven't done in many years. So good luck to you, and I wish you the best, and thank you for your consideration. Any questions?
Questions more? No, see none.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Thanks, sir.
Any discussion from the board?
I move that the ratification of the collective bargaining agreement between Butler County, MRDD, and the Professionals Guild of Ohio.
Do we have a motion for a second? Let me just say for the record that I appreciate the mission and the job that you're doing. But in this economic times, when we're asking all of our people to cut back, lay off, furlough, it's all tax dollars. And I understand the argument that it's not local tax dollars, but they're all tax dollars. And there really shouldn't be any reason why part of our team has to suffer while the others prosper. We're all in this together. And I think it sends the wrong message. I was opposed to the 12 that we did before, and I reluctantly went along with it. Things have gotten considerably worse. I was right then, shouldn't have been done, shouldn't be done now. So with that, I will not second it, and I'll oppose the agreement.
Well, as I made the motion, I disagree with that thought, because as county commissioners, we have to make decisions based on funds that different organizations rely upon. And given the MRDD's statement of what they've done in the last year and in the last several years with making cuts of $3.9 million, reducing staff, and their projections and forecasts of when they would be going to the citizens for another levy was not until 2012 or 2013, which is very admirable. Not to say that also is that, you know, the 80 people that do the work at MRDD, very dedicated and, in my mind, to be highly commended for the work that they do to help our citizens who are less fortunate and do have problems. We shouldn't be painting the funds that are different with the same brush. And my thinking is that if the general fund was in good shape, better shape, and the MRDD fund was in not so good a shape or didn't pass a levy, we wouldn't stop from granting of raise if it was warranted in the general fund just because the MRDD fund was in jeopardy or in crisis. Because the general fund is in crisis and the MRDD fund is not, we shouldn't use that same brush. We need to take a look at each fund, the revenue source, and their forecast, and make determinations. So that's why I would support the ratification of this agreement, and feel that as we move forward, when all the different funds that we have to consider, that we consider them separately. And I think that's important when we look at the water and sewer fund, the community development fund, the MRDD funds. All those have separate sources and separate forecasts, and need to have the separate consideration that's due to each of those funds in order to make sure that we do what is right based on their mission. So that's why I support approving that. This Reddit.
Chuck, give me a comment.
I'd
just like to just touch on a couple things. I think it's time that government looks at sustainability in levies, not when we have to go back out and raise the taxes on our voters again. And we've done that year after year after year. Our people are hurting. They can't pay anymore. And when they voted for this levy, things were entirely different. And I think it's prudent that we make every effort to save every penny. And I commend MRDD for the cuts you've made. But it was the right thing to do, and this is the right thing to do. And the forecast isn't getting better in the future. So to have these reopening languages, I mean, nobody has a crystal ball, but everybody understands where the economy's headed. It's not getting better. We shouldn't send the wrong message. We need to deal with the issue, and this is part of dealing with it. And I would contend that if MRDD couldn't pass a levy, that I would be voting to reduce raises and hold down costs and our other funds and our other agencies to push money over to provide those services. So I think that works both ways. So in the interest of the best interest of the county, in the best interest of the taxpayers, we're all on the same team here, you know, and we all should be looking to ways to save money collectively. And this is an instance to where we don't walk the walk, but talk the talk. Let's get to it. Let's deal with this budget and get it fixed, get it under control, because this is not even a blip on the radar screen to the issue we're really looking at. But I think it does send a message, and we have to be consistent. Motion dies, lack of a second. We'll go back now to the agenda as on the schedule. Judge Kennedy, you have the floor.
How are you today?
Fine, thank you.
I want to thank you for allowing me to get on your agenda, to give me some of your time. On May 11th, you invited all of the office holders to a meeting. And at that meeting, you discussed the update of the budget crisis and where we are today. At the end of that meeting, you asked us, each of us, to contemplate the budget, the current crisis, the future, and to provide you with suggestions, solutions on how to address these issues. Something tells me after today you're not going to invite me to any more meetings or ask my opinion on anything anymore. These are recycled binders. When people submit evidence to the court, we keep them. We usually take them down to Harrison Elementary so the little kids have a new binder each year when they start school. And now that lawyers realize that we're keeping them, they come back and steal them so they don't have to buy them anymore. So you did not spend the money for those binders. In thinking about this problem, I started with this analysis. Number one, this economy is not turning around. You read Times, Wall Street Journal, Cincinnati Enquirer, the Hamilton Journal. The situation is stagnant. This economy is not going to grow. We are going to shed more jobs, millions of jobs, still. It's going to happen here. It's going to happen in Cincinnati. It's going to happen in Warren County. It's going to happen across the United States. Based on those economic predictions, I don't believe the county is going to be in better financial shape for a minimum of 5 years, and it could be longer. You need a whole housing industry to turn around. You need a whole retail industry to turn around. You need jobs, companies to start hiring again to move people off of their current financial crisis situation. So in looking at that economic situation, I said, what about government? My whole formula is based on these two premises. Government is nothing more than a big business, and it should be run like a business. Government has the fiduciary responsibility to the taxpayers. The taxpayers are our source of funding. They are our clients for the products and the services that we provide. As with any business in this economy, they're looking at costs across the board, and they are reducing them. But they're not just doing it carte blanche. They just don't say, across the board, everybody fails. Everybody gets a cut. They're looking at their organization and starting to take looks at shaping that. You see General Electric, what are they doing? They're dumping their credit section. They're not dumping aeronautics. They have faced layoffs, but that's their bread and butter. Fixing engines, generating something for the government, for the Air Force to buy, that's their bread and butter. They're building reserves. They're taking a step back and saying, you know what? This rainy day, it's the 100-year storm. Do I have enough to weather it? Small businesses, they're making that same thought and consideration. These builders out here that were great builders have these huge developments. They're now sitting wondering, do I have enough in reserves to make it? Can I make it another month? Can I make it 6 months? At what point in time am I going to lose everything? The ground I own? The business I've worked for my entire life? So they're all looking at reserves. The other thing they're looking at is limiting debt. So if I look at government as the business, I then say, what basic economic principle do I stand for? In government, it's fiscal soundness. It is a term of art used by the government. It means a statement of public health, the financial health of a government. In the short term, fiscal soundness means stability. Do you have the ability to service all upcoming obligations? In the long term, it means fiscal sustainability. The ability to fulfill the government's current value budget and requires that the present value of liabilities is no greater than the present value of assets. Sustainability for the long term for us, you're now looking at a 5-year window. Do I believe, after looking at everything that I've looked at financially, that you're at a $5 million deficit in your general fund? No, I don't. I don't believe that whatsoever. I believe as time goes on in the fall, you're going to come back and say, you're still shedding. And that number's going to go up. So the reality here today is, what is that real number? And that real number not only encompasses the budgets that all of us submit, that number encompasses our long-term debt obligations that we've taken on. Those two things together talk about what we need to sustain as an entity, as a good business, as the business of the taxpayers. When I thought about those principles, the next step in my analysis was to do the due diligence you asked me to do to examine our current finances, current obligations, long-term debt, and the 5-year budget. In each of your books, and I have it tagged, and I have a limited number if somebody wants to look what I'm talking about as we go. Here, Mr. Schwein. I have a couple more if anybody wants one. If you look at 2005, and all of these records were got, I received these by a public records request from the auditor's office. I have the CD-ROMs if you want them. If you look at column F, this is the original budget request that every office holder submitted under the general fund. I looked at nothing else but the general fund. I can't speak to anything not in the general fund. Column G were their actual expenditures. Column H is the amount they were over or under. If you turn to the last page of 14 of 15, this is your long-term debt obligation. We budgeted for $6,223,070.50. The obligations, principal, and interest that came due that year was $36,420,912.47. That budget allotment alone was over $30,197,841.97. I cannot speak to anybody else but DR Court. Everybody else's budget requests and expenditures were in here. That's up to you to address. But the DR Court budget was 8 of 15. Our column F that we budgeted for was $1,661,054.72. Our expenditures were $1,594,223.34. We were under budget, $66,822.38. Our next line is the parent education. While this sits in the general fund, it is a pass-through. The taxpayers do not pay this money. Anyone who's receiving a divorce in this county that has children, files the complaint for divorce, files a dissolution, they have to attend mandatory parent education class. It's in the statute under Title 31. They pay the cost of that class. Your taxpayers, you, do not pay that. However, it's in here showing as a general fund expense because these parents pay at the clerk's office and the clerk's office then sends your money over to the treasurer's office and parks it. That money paid by these parents then gets dumped into the general fund. So when you look at parent ed, that's not a taxpayer liability, but it's still accounted for on our budget. If you then turn to 2006, and I'm going to do the same thing.
Hey, Sharon, before we leave that, could I just make one point?
Sure.
Back on page 15 of 15, where you talk about the long-term debt.
Mm-hmm.
Now, you just basically talked about your understanding of a pass-through item through the general fund, correct? That is parent education?
Right.
Mm-hmm. Okay. The original budget for that particular year, mm-hmm. you know, did not contemplate because, you know, it depends upon interest rate.
Right.
A long-term financing.
Correct.
A refinancing.
Correct.
Okay.
I understand
so
that.
So what that is, you know, that almost $32 million, you know, and once you take that out, $31 million, it pretty much matches the original mm-hmm. budget. All that is a pass-through.
I understand, because okay. under the CAFR report, all our long-term debt, numbers of them have been already encumbered, and that money's held for those debts. I understand that.
But you do understand it's just like parent education. Exactly.
Right. I understand
okay.
that.
All right. Good. Thank you.
2006, you have the same response. Column F is your original budget, G is your actual expenditures, and H is the amount departments are over or under. DR Court is 8 of 14. Our budget was $1,732,300. Our expenditures actual was $1,585,569.78. We were under budget. Again, right below that is our pass-through account. Parent ed. Long-term debt, 14 of 14. Budget at four was $4,621,571.28. What the general fund took the hit of was, even if it was a pass-through, showing here $6,648,128.69. I ran the same analysis for 2007. And again, the columns changed though because in the auditor's information, I got less data. They ended up giving me just the original, the expenditures, and then I did the math on the over and under. So your new columns for 2007 are D is your original budget, E is actual expenses, F is the amount over and under. DR Court is 10 of 18. The carryovers on page 9. We asked for $1,671,047. We spent $1,665,509.13. We were under our budget again that year. In 2008, it would be the same columns. Your long-term debt on that year is 16 of 18 and 17 of 18. Budgeted in these numbers was $8,195,422, and what was expended was the budget was $8,195,422, but we expended $21,299,915.54.
Again, the net impact is significantly less than that because it's a pass-through.
There is some of that is true, that those amounts have been set in reserves, but not all of those amounts have been set in reserves. I gave you the same for 2008. What I noticed in looking at this, and this gets to my conclusions, when we get to the over and under sheet, I looked at your budget for 2009 that I received from the auditor's office, and I put it in here just so you could see it when we then discuss some other differences. Can you check for those charts? I have a tab in here called O/U. It's the over and under. In any business proposition, I said, what are we spending? How was it budgeted, and did we meet the budget? And if we're not meeting the budget, what are we doing that causes our budget numbers to go off so largely? So in calculating the overs and unders, this is everybody's listing, and you get a bigger group because you supervise many more of these agencies, like the mailrooms under your jurisdiction and planning and development. So all of that's at the top, and I tried to keep everybody in rational categories, and I got those categories from the auditor's office. But as you look at this year end, this last page on the general fund, and I include it, long-term debts and obligations, in 2005, for those departments that were over budget, $37,243,539. For those departments that came in under budget, that was $3,229,188.76. So out of all the over budgeting, even through pass through, I'll use Tim's word, general fund obligations, that was $34,014,350 was not projected in a budget. That was troubling to me, that we could be so far off our budgeting. So I did the same thing for 2005. What was budgeted? What was requested? What did we spend? And again, we came up with $56 million that wasn't budgeted for. In 2007, having that same analysis, $17 million not budgeted for. For the first time in 2008, we were under. We actually budgeted for, or at least given everybody's what they didn't take and everybody what they did take, we came out on the positive side. In fiscal year 2009, if you add up the budget column as of that May number from the auditor's office to sustain what everybody has requested in the general fund, given what was put in here for debt and bond obligations, $90,435,607.26. That's a number. Based on these principles and that five-year review, I then said, go back to your basic principles, stability, sustainability. In order to do short-time debt, you need to meet $90 million. Out of the 2009 submitted budgets as we sit here today, based on the auditor's numbers. Because of this wide array of what has happened in looking at this five-year window, there are some basic principles. Number one, a budget submission should not be a suggestion. I look at 05, 06, 07 and say, where did we go wrong? I don't know. I only speak for myself. A budget must be a realistic statement of projected expenditures. Understating a budget might look good on paper, but it leads to overspending, short-time fiscal instability, and long-term fiscal unsustainability. You can't plan for what you don't know. My other suggestion is finite criteria in creating a budget. Costs that fluctuate should be examined by the highest of actual expenditures used in the last 3 years of a budget cycle. I'll take myself for example. I have an account that I have no control of where it goes, attorney's fees and interpreters. The criteria for creating a budget in that kind of a world should be the highest of 3 years. If what I did in 08 isn't higher than 07 and 06, I should be forced to use the highest number of those 3 years. So when people are submitting budgets to you, you actually get real numbers, something that's going to show you what we need to be stable, and then you can make long-term planning things for sustainability. The budget submission should be a final statement. Departments should not exceed their budgets. I say that knowing this, there are times that there are reasons people extend budgets. I understand that. I don't have a problem with that. General Division gets 5 capital murder trials in a year. You're going to see attorney's fees go through the roof. You know what those costs are. Some things you don't foresee. But for common costs, we do see that. We know what those are. So if your staff numbers are this, you don't get to add 5 people. Not until you plan that in your next budget. These should be real numbers. It's only then that this county is stable financially in the short term, and then sustainability, you can project long term what it is. Finances, long term debt. In the back of your packet that I received from the first sheet, and it's not in the ring binders. The first page is that restatement of what happened in the 05 through 09 budget years. After that, I have given you the CAFR report pages. From 2007, CAFR report, page 178, this is the last 10 years ratio of general bonded debt outstanding. These are significant numbers. We have increased from 1998, with the highest year being 2006, with general bonded debt of $64 million. The CAFR report also gave you long-term debt obligations and tells us exactly where our long-term obligation debts were spent. How did we get into this big debt situation? All of these contracts, all of these things that we develop, I'm not passing judgment, good, bad, indifferent. I'm just saying we've done this, and this is part of that picture of sustainability, to look at this and where we're going with this debt. Obviously, where we sit today, we can't take any more long-term general bond debt on. So part of my analysis, my solution, is we don't do long-term bond debt anymore. I understand anticipatory notes that when we took them out are to be converted into bonds. I understand that. We have to do that. That's the world of business. But we don't have to do any new ones. That would be my urging. You have to build reserves, and I understand that you understand this, but in the CAFR report, when we started 2005, cash on hand to run this county, pay paychecks, turn on the lights, we started out with $8,715,587. In 2006, we went down. We had $5,262,983 cash on hand. That does not include, I understand, our long-term debt in that CAFR report already has monies held somewhere out here in the gray world to match up to those debts, because that's how we got those bonds. This is cash to pay your utility bill. It improved in 2007. We actually saved up to, when we started December of 07, beginning January 08, $13,287,018. We went slightly down in 2008. At the year end of 2008 in that fund, we had $11,656,994. That account means significant. That's a significant account to me, because it's what we're carrying over into the next year to start our year. Before we get our taxes paid, before we have taxpayers paying their bills. I understand this is a fluid concept, and in February we get new funds, and all of this is a big cycle. But what happens when the cycle hiccups? What happens when the tax bills are due and people can't pay that like we've had in the last 2 years? These reserves are critical, absolutely critical. So for every dollar that we're spending in reducing budgets, the excess needs to be held in reserves and not be tapped into. At one point in time in this county, we had significant reserves. I'm troubled by the fact that we don't have them. Controlling operating budgets was the next thing I looked at based on 05 through 09. I will say it again. I believe that departments should be looked at individually. I am a small department. My hit on the general fund is insignificant compared to other entities. We've already sustained a 6% cut, okay? We laid off people, we furloughed because our people all agreed to furlough. You're not paying them for 2 weeks out of the year. That's how we're coming under. However, departments that are small or slow to growth should not bear a reduction identical to departments that grow with larger growth. Each of those spreadsheets, your over and under sheets,
oh, I'm sorry,
you're going to have to share it, Tim, because I need one. When you look at these, this is everybody in the county. I took 05, 06, 07, 08, 09 budgets, actual expenditures, and I put it all out on a spreadsheet. I gave you the graph of where their budgets went, where their expenditures went. These are all numbers based on the auditor's numbers. I have tagged my court. As you read this spreadsheet for DR Court, and I looked at budgets, and I gave you categories, percentage budget difference year to year. From 05 to 06, my budget increased 3.86%. From 06 to 07, I went down 3.48%. From 07 to 08, I went up 9.99%. Give me a 10. From 08 to 09, I went down 3.07%. If you look at budget growth from 05 to 09, I grew 6.88%. That's my total growth in that 5-year period. My actual expenditures were less than my budget. When you read that 05 budget versus my expenditures, I'm under except for 1 year, 2007, by $200, and that's parent ed. If you look down below, that parent ed account, we spent $43,880. Down below, I gave you how those my budget and parent ed calculate together. Do you see those numbers? That's what caused me to go over. But that's not a real number. That's a pass-through. My expenditure growth from 05 to 06 is negative 0.8. From 06 to 07, my expenditure growth is 5.37%, same in 08. In 08 to 09, I grew 1.16% from 08 to 09. If I look at my expenditures from 05 to 08, I grew 10.14%. If I hold my budget line item for 2009, my growth from 05 to 09 is 11.42%. Did they not tag them? One of the things that we talk about when we go to budget cycles is I talk about, and every department does, I know this, because I know that there's great angst with office holders. We bring money into the general fund, but when we sit in a budget hearing, nobody recognizes that money. And what we're told is, that's a big wash. It all comes out in the wash. It doesn't really mean anything to these numbers. That's not really true. Because when you turn behind that page and I take out my parent ed, which the parents pay for that class, you're not paying for it, the taxpayers aren't, my numbers change. And when you turn the page again, and then you remove all the other costs that I bring in, all the other monies that I bring into the general fund, it changes. It changes and it makes it look percentage-wise, I'm taking a bigger cut of the general fund. But technically, I'm not. If you start looking at those numbers from the first page to the second page, I'm taking less. So office holders want some recognition of what we are bringing into the county at the budget cycle. Not simply to say this is a wash. There needs to be some recognition of what they all bring in. But I can't spend $1 million and not get some credit for what we do bring into the fund. So I'm asking for an individualized approach. And I'm looking at an individualized approach when you go to cutting budgets further. One thing that we talked about at that May 9th meeting was collective bargaining agreements. I have nothing against unions. I used to be a member of one. But the one thing I heard from that meeting is we can't do anything about their collective bargaining agreement. We can't do anything about their increases. Okay? That might be true. You might not, and I wouldn't recommend breaching a contract. No sense in bringing more trouble to yourselves. But when departments get cut, I've read every collective bargaining agreement that you have, cover to cover. There are layoff provisions in every single one. They go down the line of who goes out first, temporary workers. They then go in succession for who gets laid off, and they have a schedule of recall. Just because a collective bargaining agreement exists does not mean that that entity, that department, that office, whoever they are, should not equally bear the trouble that we're in today. Three of your collective bargaining agreements have provisions that if, I want to read it correctly, in the event that the state of Ohio cuts funding to the general fund of Butler County and resulting appropriations are insufficient to maintain wage rates and increases provided under the agreement without the layoff of employees in the bargaining units represented by the union, the employer may reopen the provisions of this article for renegotiation. Three of your 12 collective bargaining agreements have that. So at that meeting, I was greatly disturbed that only those people suddenly that work in this county that aren't members of a union, you're going to take all of their benefits. You're taking their unpaid holidays. And that's not going to work across the board because legally you can't do that. You have unclassified and classified workers in those offices. You can't do that to exempt employees. They're paid for the job they do. So when they're off on that holiday, you can't take their money. You have to cut them by a percentage. But you cannot, across the board, just say people who are non-union are going to suffer this loss. They're going to be the ones that don't get paid on holidays. They're going to be the ones that have their health insurance go up 10%. They're going to be the ones that did all of your other three suggestions. I'm not buying that. I buy the fact that we are in it together. We're in it to win it, and we're in it together. You are the CEOs of this corporation. I'm a little cog. I provide a service to the taxpayers. That's all I do. You're the CEOs. You have the tough decisions to make. But I am imploring you to actually look at these figures and make decisions based on what entities have already done and what entities haven't done. And don't just do a hatchet job across the board. Taking more from me, what are you going to get? A couple hundred thousand? Is that going to meet your $10 million debt obligation at the end of this year? No. You'd have to wipe out the entire DR court to get anything going. Okay, for some people, litigants, that probably would be a blessing, but that's not really going to happen. The most you're going to get from me is $1 million. You still got $9 million out here missing. Last but not least, my last focus is this. I believe good government is transparent government. I believe that all of us sitting in this room are given a job to do. There are times when the day looks dreary. But we have a job to do to the taxpayers, and that is to be open, honest with them about their money and how it's spent. We have an obligation to protect the taxpayers from fraud, abuse, from overspending. We have an obligation to protect them from ourselves. I am urging you to pursue legally against any contractor or contractor has breached a duty of obligation to this county, legally. Under Title 23, contract statute of limitations is 15 years. I don't care if they don't have money now. You can't predict if they're going to win the lottery tomorrow or if they get an inheritance. I want a judgment against them. I want them hounded to the rest of their living days, breathing days, to get the taxpayer money back. I am asking you to pursue litigation against NORMAP, Ron Luton. I'm sending a letter to the prosecutor's office. He walked out of here with $1,370,000, and I want my money back. He breached a contract obligation to this county when he didn't give us a performance bond, and I want my money back. You get that money, and you're almost to 10,000 or 10 million. You're a third of a way to 5 million if that's really what the budget deficit is, but I want my money back. I do not want us to pay any obligation to any entity who does not possess an appropriate contract or corresponding resolution. You cannot walk through the auditor's door and get a check cut without a legal contract and a resolution from this board. And if there is money out there that we don't have that for, I want that money back. I want contracts, when we have requests for proposals, to go to the lowest competitive bidder. I understand this. Sometimes the lowest bid isn't the best bid for the service. I understand that. I appreciate that. I have no problem with that. But the lowest bidder on any contract should get that, or the lowest alternative bidder in additional work, not just merited out on some contract that we aren't giving a request for proposal on, that we're just going to hand out the door because it's under the $25,000 mark. We need to stick to our terms, and we need to make sure that we're using the lowest bidder. If that's the difference between $6,500 and $23,999, then I want the $6,500 bid. In conclusion, and I'm sure you're happy that I said that word, you asked me for my solutions. I have looked at this globally. I have not been delinquent in my due diligence. I have worked tirelessly in looking at these finances and being sensible. This isn't personal. This is business. I'm not taking it personal. This is business. But my business sense says we need to go back and restructure how we budget. Those are real numbers. We need to go back and take a look at our long-term debt and not assume any new long-term debt. We surely to God need to start saving more money. For every dollars that we bring in that's over that budget, it shouldn't be spent. It needs to go into the cash, coffer, and held. Any day we can have a calamity. You can have a hurricane, tornado, whatever. If we don't have enough money to turn the lights on, we can't serve the public that we have a sworn fiduciary duty to protect. Lastly, I'm asking you to hold office holders to their budget. I'm asking you to look at this as an individual concept, and I am asking you to do your fiduciary due diligence duty in protecting the taxpayers from people who have breached their contract with this county and get their money back.
Thank you. I think. Does anybody have any board members have a comment? Greg? Chuck?
Okay.
Well, don't sit down because I think I do. Don't know where to start, really. First of all, thank you for all the work effort you put into this. This is more information that I've seen since I've been here, in a summary. And when my first year here, I asked how, trying to get my arms around a debt and how much debt we had and how much we're going to pay off. And I think the answer to that was the year before we paid off none. And the year that I got there, the half a year, we were going to make a big dent in it at about $1 million or $1.5 million. In a $90 million budget. It's obscene. I cannot believe we're not carrying a minimum of $25 million in cash reserves. And I've heard it said you can't do it, it's impossible. That's just sound business. It's not that hard to do. Tough choices, you know. We can either do it what you said. We can either 3 and 5 and 8 and 10 million dollars this at a time for the next 3 or 4 or 5 years, but the end result's going to be the same. We've got to get our fiscal house in order. We passed a resolution 5 weeks ago, Commissioner Furman and I did, Commissioner Jolivet wasn't there, directed our personnel people to send letters to all the bargaining units to reopen.
Good.
Has that letter gone out, Tim?
I've got the draft for you to look at today.
6 weeks, we got a draft. 5 days saves us $1 million. Look, this is not a game. Now, I get beat, blamed, and said, you know, I don't understand what's wrong with Dixon. He thinks the world's coming to an end. He thinks it's not going to get any better, and I know our sales tax will be up next month. They're not coming up. We have to get ready. It's not pleasant, and we shouldn't do it on the back of our non-union employees. What did we do the first thing? We froze their wages 6-8 months ago, and we're still holding them to it today. And if you'll sit here for a few minutes, you'll watch us vote on more step increases for the Children's Services Department. We've been doing it month, week, 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 and week. And nothing changes. 6 weeks have passed since Commissioner Furman and I directed the department to issue those letters. And what I'm going to sit here today, and I don't know where the agenda is, right here, but my best guess, and it makes me want to throw up, well, we don't have that many. We've got approved probation of one, only one. We usually have about 8. step increases, and we have to deal with that. Look, we're going broke.
Yes, you are.
We sat in a meeting last week, and our chief financial officer told us and the rest of our office holders that mid-2010, you'll get your paycheck, but we'll ask you to hold them because there won't be enough money in the bank to pay it. Now, cash it. Now, that's not going to happen when I'm sitting here. Now, this is an emergency. And it's high time, past time, we deal with it. And you're right in doing it. I know it's not pleasant, and I'm sure you're going to get some comments about what you've done. But it's the right thing to do at the right time. Now, I want that letter sent to reopen these union contracts today. Not tomorrow morning, today. Now, we can all sit here and pretend like we're getting along and holding hands, but we have to act, and we have to act now. This is not personal. It's exactly what you said. This is business. The outcome to this is we're going to lose our bond rating. Nobody's going to want to do business with us, and we're going to look like a bunch of fools. This is not complicated. It's tough, but it's not complicated. Now, if you think you're going to sit here and wait and raise tax, sales tax, if that's the solution, that won't work either, because I'm going to tell you, the people are paying all they can pay. You put it on the ballot, and I'll be the first one leading a referendum to take it off. Now, we've got to straighten up our financial house. We have a positive note. We have finally hired a finance person to come in and create much what you've done, create a dashboard effect, give us the numbers that tells us so we can hold different accounts accountable. We know when increases have been given, we know when something's been bought that hasn't been approved, and we address it then, okay? This is not a game. You know, now I got plenty of things to do, and getting beat up here and finger pointed to and accused of lopping off people's heads because you got to cut the payroll is not any fun. But we've got a job to do, and we better, by God, be doing it. So for the ones who beat you up over it, I say job well done. Cindy Carpenter.
Judge Kennedy, I think you underestimate yourself. You're not a little cog. You just proved yourself an excellent attorney, an excellent public servant, and the excellent quality of your staff. So I commend you. And in our office at our weekly managers meeting, we give out a traveling trophy to the employee that best exemplifies excellence in public service. So today we'll be coming down to your office to give you the Shooting Star Traveling Trophy for excellence in public service. So thank you very much. We're passing out our suggestions. Good morning, commissioners.
Morning.
In response to your request for recommendations to address the shortfall in general fund revenues, the directors of the Clerk of Court's office and I respectfully submit suggestions gathered from the employees of our office. What am I doing wrong here? I've got feedback. I want to begin by saying that we do not believe there is one singular answer to the estimated $3 million shortfall of general fund dollars. With the exception of raising sales tax, a solution that neither the commissioners nor the clerk's office supports, we believe that a realistic solution will likely be comprised of a multitude of smaller steps. It is also our belief that addressing these problems will require reexamining the delivery systems of the services that are currently provided by county government, a process that's likely to make some people uncomfortable and cross turf boundaries. With that being said, I'd like to lead off our list of suggestions with the one that received the most support. And this falls under the category of immediate action. Our number one suggestion is to implement all feasible cost-saving suggestions proposed by elected officials, no matter how insignificant they may seem. Our second category is to build in accountability. Number two suggestion is to evaluate the past 8 years' expenditures for both general fund and non-general fund monies. And I see that Judge Kennedy has already performed that task for the general fund. So thank you. Number three, report all county revenue and expenditures under the office of the responsible elected official. Again, Judge Kennedy touched on that. As an elected official who collects and distributes $55 million a year at our budget hearings, I would like to see those numbers reflected on the presentations provided by the commissioner's office. Number four, require a cost-benefit analysis in a closing audit report on all new expenditures over $10,000. Number five, establish a project management model for all newly approved expenditures. This would include defining the project, timeline, budget, resources, contingency plans, goals, objectives, stakeholders, and termination. And this is a very important suggestion. And if you take these principles and apply them to the phone upgrade project, you will see that as a county, we failed to define that phone project. My office happens to be the last office to come online, and there are some very troubling issues with the way that this project was managed, in that now that we're the last office, the phone system will not meet our phone needs. Number six, plan targeted budget cuts to ensure that the required or statutory services remain in place. Our next category is about mailing costs, because postage costs are significant and it's a large portion of what we do in the clerk's office. Number seven, plan the computerization of certified mail, which would be, you know, a commitment in time and resources. Number eight, review all regularly issued mail to determine if the correspondence can be issued by postcard at a reduced cost. Number nine, review all regularly issued interoffice mail to determine if it can be scanned and sent email. Our next category is organizational efficiencies. And we developed this category because of the conversations we'd had with the commissioner's staff in our budget hearings. We sort of resent the fact that the clerk's office is put in a category called justice. We do not intersect with many of the other players in the justice system, but we do intersect with other departments, and there are efficiencies that could be built in with collaboration, but not in the particular categories that we're given on the commissioner's spreadsheets. So that's our category, organizational efficiencies. Number 10, combine all duplicate county departments, such as victims assistance programs and personnel departments. Number 11, implement a paperless county purchase order system to improve the labor-intensive process. And that goes across the board for any process that could be made paperless. That saves us employee resources that can be used to serve the court. Number 12, review the cost-benefit of establishing a public defender system versus our current court-appointed attorney system. Number 13, review the use of non-emergency expenditures for inmates. Number 14, reduce the top county salaries during this financial crisis. Number 15, contract for a debt collection agency to serve all county offices. Now we go to interagency coordination. Number 16, establish a facilities review committee to meet monthly to plan facility maintenance, renovation, and future building. And that ties directly into Judge Kennedy's point that we need to stop incurring some of these debt expenses. 17, establish a court administrators committee with Gary Yates, Annette Lawley, Rob Clevenger, Jerome Cook, and Linda Lovelace to meet monthly and coordinate court management practices. 18, establish regular weekly meetings between the commissioners and their department heads to coordinate their management practices. Number 19 is a key issue because a major expense of the county is the computer systems and the information systems infrastructure that supports those systems. Reestablish monthly data board meetings with appointments of members from the offices that incur the highest information systems cost and offices that employ information systems directors. Number 20 is a solution that is slightly different than the one that has been proposed by the Commissioner's Office to have central purchasing. I would recommend that we establish a purchasing committee to meet monthly and comprise that committee of the key purchasing agents from each office. So if there is an ability to, if someone has knowledge of, you know, purchasing the copy or paper at a discount, we can share that, yet we don't have one office determining how those supplies are distributed to the clerk of court's office. An example of why it would not work for central purchasing is we don't know when we're going to have a run on passports in the clerk's office. People have decided not to travel abroad because, you know, of the recession. But on occasion, we have a run on passports. We don't have the passport film there. What happens in our office is Jeff Weirich goes with his credit card and purchases passport film and provides it to our office within 15 minutes of running out of film. So we don't believe that we could manage our supplies more effectively than the commissioner's office could do for us. 21, establish a revenue review committee to meet monthly, comprised of members of those offices that generate over $10 million per year in revenue. And again, this speaks to the same issues Judge Kennedy noted, that we need to do a better job of projecting our revenue. Number 22, discuss County Commissioners Association's legislative proposals with the particular Butler County official who might be affected by proposed changes in legislation, and that's so that you can go to your statewide association with information about how those changes would you know, how those would really play out in Butler County. Number 23, establish regular monthly meetings with elected officials during this budget crisis so that you can monitor the implementation of any of these cost-cutting measures or any cost-cutting measure proposed. As you can see, we don't have a magic answer. What we would like to see is every office holder, department, and agency head coming forward to present small, workable solutions. Our office often comes up with a catchphrase for motivation in difficult situations, and we use humor to help us along. And my staff came up with a catchphrase for this situation, and that is that you need to eat the elephant one bite at a time. We thank you very much for giving us this opportunity and forum to present our ideas. Do you have any questions about any of these general proposals?
Thank you, Cindy. Does the board have any questions? Thank you. Appreciate what you've done. You know, we usually go on with the rest of the agenda, but we got everybody here. If it's okay with the board, we'll just move to anyone have any comments, want to address the board, Okay. You're welcome to stay. You don't have to stay. It's a pretty short agenda. It shouldn't take 5 minutes if you want to sit through the rest of it. Tim, you want to take us through the rest?
Certainly.
We have two travel requests to consider today. First, from CSEA, Ray Pater, to attend the Executive Board General Membership Meeting, Child Support, Newark, Ohio, July 15, 2017, $515. Next, we have a request from Community Development, Karen Gabbard, to attend Ohio Conference of Community Development, $365, Columbus, Ohio, June 9 and 10. As we move on to finance resolutions, you know, we have four items to consider today. First item is a transfer between accounts of $767.67 between the contract services and the insurance account. Next, under the tax abatement fund, Fund 0100, we have an increase in budget of $9.54. Then we have a decrease in budget in the same account for $298.71 to reverse funds no longer needed. Item number three and four are the same. This is the stimulus dollars for the workforce program for the summer, and it's reclassing the budget from Fund 1782 to Fund 1780. In addition, under finance, we have to establish new funds for receiving revenue and dispersing funds, and the following special revenue funds are being created. First, Fund 463, Juvenile Indigent Guardianship. Next, Fund 1003, FEMA Grant. Next, Fund number 1783, the Workforce Development Stimulus Funding. Next, under Capital Project Funds, Fund 1907, the Woods of Lakewood Fairfield Township RID Fund. Then a new Fund 2310 for the OPWC Tylersville Road Improvement. Under agency funds, we have a new Fund 6210 for community block CF pass-through dollars. And then Fund 6366 for the Workforce Development Stimulus Fund. As we move on to personnel, there's three items of personnel. First is to hire a clerical assistant, Melissa Pate, in Job and Family Services at a rate of $13.38 an hour, effective June 8th. Next is to promote Sarah Glob, Collective Bargain Unit member in Children's Services, from Social Services Worker 3 to Social Services Worker 4 at a rate of $21.07. Next is to reclassify Emily Sabin from Social Services Worker 4 to Social Services Worker 3 with a reduction in pay down to $20.13 per hour, effective June 15th. As we move on to Job and Family Services. Job and Family Services has one contract for you to consider today. It is a child care contract with Fairfield Fund Learning Center, effective June 109 to June 30th, 2010 at $127,000 even. Next, under water and sewer, we have three items for you to consider today. First is to receive and refer bids for the Morris Road Water Main Project. The low bid from Cooley Construction and Excavating at $323,998. A total of 12 bids were received. The highest bid was Trend Construction at $412,616.50. Next is to receive and refer bids for the asphalt requirements under contract 00A8AC. We received five bids, with the low being Barry L. Brown Paving LLC at $116,368.50. The high bid at CA Stempley Contractor at $336,840. Next, under water and sewer, we have a change order for the Yankee Road water main replacement. The change is an increase of $7,802.67, primarily due to additional driveway restoration and realignment of a farm fence. Next, under the engineer has two contracts for you to consider today, or two items to consider today. First is to receive and refer bids to retrace various county and township roads. Six bids are received. The low bid at A&A Safety, $267,664. The high bid is Interstate Road Management, $311,778. Next, the engineer asks you to cancel a sidewalk maintenance bond for Westchester Village, Phase 2B. And finally, under miscellaneous, there's three items under miscellaneous. The first is to advertise bid for institutional custody services from the Butler County Treasurer's Office. The second is to approve a juvenile court grant agreement and funding application with the Ohio Department of Youth Services. And last is to approve a reimbursement of $48.45 to Mary Ann Williams for refreshments for the Workforce One meeting. And finally, to approve then and now payments, 40 payments have been presented to you.
Would a motion to approve?
I would recommend that we pull the travel and training at this point. If you're okay. Agreement with that, we'll take a look at those.
All right, considering all of the resolutions, you know, except for the two travel and training resolutions.
I move to approve.
Second.
Commissioner Furman?
Yes.
Commissioner Dolivet?
Yes.
Commissioner Dixon?
Yes. Board have anything?
Commissioner Furman, just